Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So we've talked a bit about the very interesting world of intelligence in this podcast. Open source intelligence, satellite imagery, high altitude surveillance. And one terminology that you're going to come across pretty quickly in this field is two sixes. Two sixes referring to a set of two geo-coordinates, each with six numbers. So the degree of latitude or longitude, followed by four decimal places. That's the decimal system of notating a set of geo-coordinates. There's also the minutes, degrees, and seconds of longitude and latitude system. And from what I understand and what I can recall, two sixes provides a pretty significant degree of accuracy to down to, I think, a few meters. And it's kind of a pretty gold standard for pinpointing the location of something on Earth. But it's not the only system for notating geo-coordinates. And then when you kind of think, well, how do we pinpoint somewhere on Earth? You begin, you know, getting into the topic of, well, isn't the Earth actually moving? Not the planet itself, but the plates upon which land is thereupon, and you know, curvatures and maps, and it's a whole complicated subject, really. So that's my question, Herman and Corin. Is what I'd love to learn a little bit more about today is understanding the differences. Is it the case that decimal and GMS are just basically two different ways for notating that don't neither really has an inherent a difference in terms of the what it's based upon, but more precisely, if we have a very specific geo coordinate on Earth that we can say this is where something of interest is on the planet, how do we account for the fact in those observations that's based upon where satellites place a point to be, that's going to change over time? Something that is tangentially related to this topic, and which I think is maybe an interesting sidetrack we could talk about, is the demarcating of borders. So borders were demarcated using physical obstacles traditionally. There's a really good book about borders that talks about their history, international borders I'm talking about. And borders were traditionally defined by reference to physical obstacles commonly. So you might, like, the border is commonly delineated or demarcated as being a river. And even the concept of very robust borders is a pretty recent phenomenon. These days, borders can be demarcated, if not on the ground, digitally by reference to a set of geo-coordinates. Some of the borders around Israel, which is where I spent quite a bit of time, border spotting, as I call it, it's always been. Border areas have always fascinated me, especially the borders of Israel. So my wife and I have been on various excursions to interesting places along the borders with Lebanon, Jordan, and Egypt. A really amazing drive called Route 10 that's open to civilians periodically, and I highly recommend. Make sure that's a peaceful time before you go. But the border with Lebanon is a complicated case because the Israel and Lebanon are officially in a state of war. The blue zone, the blue line, was demarcated as a line of demarcation. But if you look at the history of the borders of Israel and international borders in general, they commonly begin as ceasefire lines and withdrawal lines, and then later they become a treaty will use that same line because it's already been plotted as a border. Now, the connection between geo-coordinates and borders is as follows. The blue line is staffed by UNIFIL. I always get the UN missions. There's a few of them. United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, which of course is a topic of its mandate being interrupted, and they literally along the blue line with Lebanon, there are these blue barrels, which are physical barrels on a big long pole, and they place these along the border. So UNIFIL kind of bridges between Lebanon's official army, the LAF, and the IDF, and sends out these surveyors to plot the blue lines. Now, what I find fascinating is that, you know, you'd think when people say in the news there's a dispute over a tree, which side of the border is it on, that that's an exaggeration. But in the case of the blue line, from videos that anyone can watch on YouTube, it's not an exaggeration. They literally have a guy in a UN jacket, two soldiers from the different armed forces trying to plot the blue line and then put the marker up there to centimetric, not by the meter, precision. So that's my question there, Herman and Corin, is when we talk about how we position and agree upon where a point is on Earth, how do we get to that level of precision, and how can we have that level of precision when, as I mentioned, there's tectonic plates moving underneath the Earth, upon which things like the blue line, which is, of course, an artificial and man-made concept, are sitting upon. So Herman and Corin has talked today about geo-coordinates and how we define numerically a position on a piece of mass that is moving through space and itself also shifting around all the time.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our house in Jerusalem with my brother. It is a bit of a heavy morning here. We can actually hear the surveillance drones humming over the valley today, which is a stark reminder of where we are on this 16th of January, 2026.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And man, do we have a deep one today. Our housemate Daniel sent us a prompt that touches on something we see every day here in the Middle East, but from a purely technical and mathematical angle that I think most people completely overlook. It is about the literal ground shifting beneath the most contested borders on Earth.
It is the kind of thing that seems simple on the surface, right? You have a coordinate, you put it in your phone, and it tells you where you are. But Daniel was asking about the precision of these numbers, specifically a term he came across called 2-6s, and how we actually define a fixed point on a planet that is essentially a collection of massive, slow-moving rafts.
It is a brilliant question because it forces us to confront the fact that the ground beneath our feet is not a static object. We treat it like a stage, but it is more like a treadmill. And when you were talking about things like the blue line between Israel and Lebanon, especially now, with the ceasefire from late 2024 still feeling so fragile and the UN drawdown looming later this year, the math becomes incredibly high stakes. A few centimeters can literally be the difference between a routine patrol and a diplomatic incident.
Exactly. And before we dive into the tectonic plates and the border disputes, I want to start with the basics of how we even write these locations down. Daniel mentioned the difference between the decimal system and the degrees, minutes, second system, or DMS. Herman, why do we have two? And why does the digital world seem to have picked a favorite?
Well, the short answer is that computers are lazy and humans are traditional. Degrees, minutes, seconds is the old school way. It is based on the idea of dividing a circle into 360 degrees, then each degree into 60 minutes, and each minute into 60 seconds. It is beautiful for navigation with a sextant or a paper map because it feels very physical. You can visualize those divisions. But for a computer, doing math with base 60 is a nightmare.
Right, because you are constantly having to carry over 60s instead of 10s. It is like trying to do long division with a clock.
Precisely. So the decimal system, or decimal degrees, just takes that whole coordinate and turns it into a single floating point number. Instead of saying 33 degrees, 7 minutes, and 30 seconds, you just say 33.125. It is much easier for algorithms to process, it is more efficient for storage, and it makes calculating the distance between two points a lot faster. It is the language of OSINT and satellite imagery.
Now, Daniel mentioned this term 2-6s. From what he described, it refers to a coordinate with four decimal places, making 6 digits total if you include the 2 digits for the degree. So something like 33.1234. He called that high precision. But is it? When we look at those four decimal places, what kind of real-world accuracy are we actually talking about?
This is where the math gets fun. So if you have zero decimal places, you are just saying 33 degrees. That covers about 111 kilometers at the equator. One decimal place gets you down to 11 kilometers. Two decimal places gets you to about 1.1 kilometers. Three decimal places is 110 meters. And then we hit Daniel's four decimal places. That gives you a precision of about 11 meters.
11 meters? So if I give you a 2-6's coordinate, I'm basically pointing you to a specific house or a small patch of a field.
Exactly. For a standard commercial GPS on your phone, 11 meters is actually quite good. Most phones are accurate to within 5 or 10 meters under perfect conditions. So providing four decimal places matches the accuracy of the hardware most people are carrying. But here is the thing, Korn. If you are trying to define an international border, or if you are a surveyor trying to place a fence, 11 meters is a disaster. You could be 30 feet inside another country.
Right, so for the really high precision stuff, like what Daniel was asking about with the blue line, we must be going way beyond four decimal places.
Oh, absolutely. To get to what we call centimetric precision, you need six decimal places. The six decimal place represents about 11 centimeters. If you go to seven decimal places, you are at 1.1 centimeters. When Daniel talks about 2-6's in the context of high precision, he might actually be referring to a 6-6 coordinate pair, meaning 6 decimal places for both latitude and longitude. That is the gold standard for identifying something like a specific landmine or a boundary marker.
That is fascinating. So the number of digits is not just a matter of being tidy. It is a statement of how much you trust your measurement. But this brings us to the core of Daniel's question. Even if we have a coordinate with 8 decimal places, a perfect numerical address for a spot on the ground, that spot is moving. The tectonic plates are shifting. If I define a point in the year 2000, and then I come back today, in January of 2026, is that point still where the numbers say it is?
That is the million-dollar question, and the answer is no, it is absolutely not. This is a concept in geodesy called the reference frame. Most people use a system called WGS-84. That is the World Geodetic System of 1984. It is what your GPS uses. It is a global system where the center of the Earth is the zero point. But because the tectonic plates are moving, a fixed object on a plate, say a blue barrel on the Lebanon border, is actually moving through the WGS-84 coordinate space.
Wait, so the barrel stays put on the ground, but its address changes?
Exactly. It is like if you were standing on a moving walkway at the airport. You are not walking, but your position relative to the terminal is changing every second. Most tectonic plates move at a rate of about 1 to 7 centimeters per year. Australia is actually one of the fastest, moving north at about 7 centimeters a year. Over 20 years, that is nearly a meter and a half of drift.
So if you are trying to maintain a border with centimetric precision, like they do with the blue line, how on earth do you account for that? Do the surveyors just have to update the numbers every single year?
They have two ways of handling it. One is to use a kinematic reference frame, where the coordinates actually have a velocity component. You do not just say here is the X and Y, you say here is the X and Y at this specific time, which we call an epoch, and here is how fast it is moving. So a computer can calculate exactly where that point should be today, on January 16th, 2026.
That sounds incredibly complicated for a border guard with a map.
It is. So the other way, which is much more common for national borders and land surveys, is to use a static or plate fixed reference frame. For example, in Europe, they use ETRS-89. In North America, they use NAD-83. These systems are pinned to the tectonic plate itself. So as the whole plate moves, the coordinate system moves with it. From the perspective of someone standing on the plate, the coordinates of that blue barrel never change.
Okay, that makes sense. It is like the coordinate system is a blanket laid over the plate. The blanket moves with the plate, so the spots on the blanket stay aligned with the spots on the ground.
Exactly. But here is where the friction happens. Your GPS satellites are orbiting the whole Earth. They do not care about your local plate-fixed blanket. They are operating in that global WGS-84 space. So there is a constant tiny mathematical translation happening between what the satellites see and what your local map shows. If you do not account for the current date and the rate of drift, your high-precision coordinate could be off by several decimeters or even a meter depending on how old your data is.
This really puts the Blue Line into perspective. For those who do not know, the Blue Line is not an official international border. It is a withdrawal line established by the UN in the year 2000 to verify that Israeli forces had fully left Lebanon. And because there is no formal peace treaty, they had to mark it physically with these blue barrels. In recent months, there have been reports of military operations in villages near the Blue Line, and every time that happens, the exact location of that line becomes a matter of life and death.
And Daniel mentioned the tree dispute, which I think is such a perfect example of this. Back in 2010, there was a fatal skirmish at a place called Odaise. It started because Israeli soldiers were trying to prune a tree that they claimed was on their side of the Blue Line. The Lebanese army disagreed. We are talking about a single tree. When you are arguing over the branches of a tree, 11-meter precision is not going to cut it. You need to know exactly where that line is to within centimeters.
I remember reading about that. The UN had to come in with their cartographers and their high-precision GPS units to prove that the tree was, in fact, on the Israeli side of the line. But what strikes me is the collaborative effort Daniel mentioned. He talked about seeing UNIFIL officers working with both the Lebanese Armed Forces and the IDF to plot these points.
It is one of the few places where there is a weird technical cooperation. They use what they call the tripartite process. Representatives from both armies and the UN meet at a specific point. They all bring their own surveyors and their own GPS equipment. They hammer in these colored pickets. One blue for the UN, one red for the Lebanese army, and one yellow for the IDF.
And they have to agree on the spot before the barrel goes down, right?
Yes. They have a rule that for a point to be confirmed, the difference between their three measurements has to be within 50 centimeters. Once they agree, they build a concrete plinth and put a big blue barrel on top. As of a few years ago, they had over 270 of these barrels along that 120-kilometer line. However, with ongoing discussions about the future of the UNIFIL mandate, there is a lot of anxiety about who will maintain those markers and that data.
It is amazing that in one of the most volatile regions in the world, the final arbiter of peace is basically a very precise math problem. But going back to the tectonic plates, does the blue line itself move? If the Arabian plate and the African plate are shifting relative to each other, does the border literally stretch or tear?
You have hit on the ultimate geodetic headache. The Lebanon-Israel border sits near the Dead Sea Transform Fault System. It is a plate boundary. Now, the movement there is relatively slow, maybe 4 or 5 millimeters a year of slip. But over decades, that adds up. If the land on one side of the line is moving north slightly faster than the land on the other side, the line is technically deforming.
So the blue barrels are literally drifting apart or closer together?
In theory, yes. But because the movement is so slow, we usually treat the area as a single block for mapping purposes. However, if there were a major earthquake like the devastating one in Turkey in February of 2023, a big jump of a meter or two along the fault would physically break the blue line. You would have a literal offset in the ground where the barrels on one side no longer align with the barrels on the other.
That is a wild thought. A geological event could technically trigger a border dispute. It makes you realize how fragile our definitions of geography are. We think of nations as these permanent shapes on a globe, but they are really just temporary agreements written on a moving surface.
It is the difference between geography and geodesy. Geography is about where things are. Geodesy is about the science of measuring the Earth's shape and its orientation in space. And the deeper you go into geodesy, the more you realize that nothing is truly fixed. Even the center of the Earth, the origin point for our coordinates, shifts slightly because of mass moving around inside the planet and the melting of polar ice caps changing the Earth's crustal loading.
So, when Daniel asks how we define a position numerically on a mass that is constantly moving, the answer is essentially that we pick a moment in time and freeze it. We say, this is the coordinate as of the year 2000, and then we just do the math to adjust for the drift.
Exactly. We call it the epoch of the realization. If you look at a professional survey, it will say something like ITRF 2020, Epoch 2020 6.0. That is the technical way of saying, these numbers are exactly right as of today. If you are using them 5 years from now, you better know how to calculate the drift.
This has huge implications for the future, does it not? As we get more and more high-precision technology, like self-driving cars that need to stay in a specific lane, or drones that need to land on a specific pad, we cannot just ignore this drift anymore.
We really cannot. In fact, some countries are moving toward what we call dynamic datums. Australia is the leader here. Because they are moving so fast, they realized that their old static map was becoming dangerously inaccurate for modern tech. So they moved to a system called the ATRF, or Australian Terrestrial Reference Frame, where the coordinates on the map actually change in real time to match the global GPS coordinates. It is a live map.
That sounds like a nightmare for land deeds and property lines. Imagine your neighbor's fence slowly creeping into your yard on the digital map.
It is a massive legal hurdle. But the alternative is worse. If your car thinks the road is a meter to the left of where it actually is because of tectonic drift, you are going to have a lot of accidents. We are reaching a point where the precision of our sensors is outstripping the stability of our planet.
It is a classic case of second-order effects. We wanted better GPS so we could find our way to a new restaurant. Now we have it, and suddenly we have to account for the fact that the restaurant is moving at the speed of a fingernail growing.
I love that analogy. It is exactly that. It is slow, but it is relentless. And when you multiply that fingernail growth by 40 years of border history, you end up with a very real problem.
You know, it makes me think about those blue barrels again. They seem so solid, so permanent. But they are really just markers for a conversation that is still happening. And that conversation has to be updated every time the Earth takes a breath.
It is a perfect metaphor for international relations, is it not? You cannot just set a border and walk away. You have to maintain it, not just politically, but technically. You have to keep measuring, keep calculating, and keep agreeing on where the pickets go.
So, for the practical takeaways for our listeners, what should they keep in mind next time they look at a coordinate?
First, remember the decimal place rule. If you see 4 decimal places, that is about 11 meters. If you see 6, that is about 10 centimeters. If someone gives you a coordinate with 12 decimal places, they are probably just copying and pasting from a computer that is giving them false precision, because at that level, you are measuring the width of an atom, and your GPS definitely is not that good.
And second, if you are doing anything that requires real precision, check the datum and the epoch. A coordinate without a date is like a house number without a street name. It might get you close, but it will not get you to the door.
And finally, just appreciate the sheer complexity of what is happening when your phone tells you where you are. There is a massive mathematical dance happening between satellites orbiting at 20,000 kilometers an hour and tectonic plates moving at 5 centimeters a year, all so you can find the nearest coffee shop.
It really is a marvel. And I think it is a great reminder of why we do this show. No matter how mundane a topic seems, like a string of numbers on a screen, there is always a deeper, weirder story underneath.
Absolutely. Thanks to Daniel for sending this one in. It is definitely going to change how I look at the blue barrels next time we are up north.
For sure. And hey, if you have been enjoying My Weird Prompts and you want to support what we're doing, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a quick review on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And if you have a weird question of your own, head over to myweirdprompts.com and send it our way. We love diving into these rabbit holes.
You can find all our past episodes there too, including episode 239, where we talked about why high-altitude balloons are still used for surveillance. It actually connects quite well to this discussion of how we look at the Earth from above.
Oh, good call. That was a fun one. Well, I think we have covered the 2 sixes and the moving Earth for today.
I think so too. Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will see you in the next one.
Until then, stay curious.
And keep an eye on those tectonic plates. They are faster than they look.
All right, let's go get some coffee. I promise I will not calculate the drift of the cafe on the way there.
No promises from me. I think we are currently 4 millimeters north of where we started the episode.
Of course we are. See you, everyone.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.